it also tells you something about this need that people in general have, that if they work on something, if they invest in something, it must have a meaning that is social and that is communal. And just to read from one of the things people wrote about this, I felt that I have actually produced something of value, a feeling that I sometimes miss as a student at university.
Welcome to this episode of the Unconditional Teaching Podcast. Unconditional Teaching is a project by Jessica Koch, Katharina Pietsch, and myself, Till Zibura. Together we write articles and record interviews in which we investigate how we can create healthier relationships in learning and teaching. In this episode, Jessica and I talked to Katharina about a 5-day blog seminar that she taught in February 2020, entitled Confronting the Climate Crisis, a Writer's Room for Cultural Scholars. The goal of the seminar was that each participating student writes a blog post on an issue related to the cultural production and interpretation of the climate crisis. On the first day, students conceptualized their entry. On days 2 and 3, they wrote draft text to then receive peer review and revise and proofread and finalize their drafts so that they could be published on the university website by day 5. You can find a link to the blog in the podcast description. In this second part of our conversation, Katharina talks us through the individual days of her seminar in more detail, and we also talk about the usefulness of the Pomodoro technique and the importance of revision.
You said you wanted to talk about the structure of the seminar, how you got to the end, basically.
Yeah. From the start. So Monday, the first day, it was basically choosing a topic. So I had asked them to do 2 kinds of preparation between the prep session and the block session. One was to make themselves familiar with some basic texts about what I mean when I say a cultural studies perspective. So I asked them to read up on certain fundamental concepts that we use all the time: representation, discourse, narrative, and metaphor. And I uploaded some basic and I thought good texts to introduce them to that, if they don't feel that they are already familiar with this, because this was a what we call Vertiefungsmodul, so a third year bachelor's class. And the second preparation was I asked them to do a bit of research into representations of the climate crisis, which could be anything between like advertisements, pictures that are being used by journalists, journalistic articles about climate crisis, any kind of where they find it represented, like on Instagram, if they are following people who talk about it or do stuff on Instagram or any other kind of social media, in movies, novels, songs, any kind of popular media and so on. So I asked them to do some research into some material, because we won't have time in the block session to do this. So you need to come prepared. You need to come to the block session having already done some research and having some ideas. And I asked them to do that. And I also asked them to keep track of their research in a research log that I borrowed from you, Jessica. So thanks again for that. So on Monday, they already had done a bit of research, but I explicitly told them, you don't need to pick a topic yet. Pick some stuff that you find interesting and that you could develop into a topic, but you don't need to pick a topic. So what we did there was topic development and choosing a topic at the end of Monday. That was basically the goal for Monday. And what I did after an introduction and so on, was ask them to talk about some of their, up to 3 of their research results in small groups. Because I feel like deciding on your own is very different from just talking out loud about something, explaining it to someone else. And very often, I think, if you do this for 2 or 3 different topics where you're undecided, can give you a very, very good idea already what works. And what sounds interesting when you say it out loud and explain it to something. So that was a big part on Monday. And we also, after we'd done this, I asked them, now choose a topic and present it on a smaller poster-like format to the class. And I had them put up all their posters on one of the walls because I wanted everyone to see what's there already. Also to have this sense of accomplishment at the end of the first day that we already had a lot of these topic ideas or these topics. Some did them in forms of mind maps, some did them just like having a title there or a title with some bullet point notes and so on. And so that was Monday. So the goal for Monday was pick your topic. And Tuesday and Wednesday were drafting days, and I did those, and this was the fourth most important or most effective things that I did. I used the Pomodoro technique for this, so this is like a timekeeping method that you can adapt to all kinds of in all kinds of ways, but I used it like in the classic format, where you do 25 minutes of focused work without distractions. So no going to the bathroom, no checking Facebook, no checking emails, no watering the plants, what have you. Just do 25 minutes of focused work and afterwards a 5-minute break where you can do that stuff, not all of them probably within 5 minutes, but the most important one.
Watering the plants.
And so the idea is that the distractions that usually or very often keep us from focused work get postponed. You still get to do that. You can still kind of hold out for your next phase where you check your Facebook, but you don't do it in your writing phase. Yeah, and one of the things when I prepared for the class, this is one of the first things I thought. I knew I wanted to do this in class, not just tell people, well, this is an amazing writing or a timekeeping method. Try that out at home. I wanted it to be part of the class. So what I did on Tuesday and Wednesday in the drafting, on the two drafting days, I set up a Pomodoro timer in the main classroom. Via the projector, so everyone could see the time ticking down, so ticks down from 25 minutes in that classroom. So the rule basically was everyone who stays in this room writes according to the Pomodoro time phases. So you do focused writing without distraction 25 minutes, then you have 5-minute break, then you do another of these 25 minutes. And I scheduled different amounts of these Pomodoro units according to, well, how the day was planned and so on. And after two or three or four Pomodoro units, we had a longer break, half an hour or even an hour lunch break. So, and everyone who didn't want to use that went to the other room. For instance, one student said 25 minutes is just, he can't focus for 25 minutes. He can only
understand that completely.
He can only focus for 15. So he basically, I think he still had like this rhythm of focused work and break, but he just divided his time differently. Other people, they felt like they didn't like the breaks at all. I think the breaks in Pomodoro are really important. And yeah. I know a lot of people whose first like reservation towards the method when they hear about it the first time is, but all these breaks, they are going to distract me so much. But I think it actually, yeah, if you do it, if you like, just give it a try. I think for many people, not for all of them, of course, but for many people, this works much better than they initially expected.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, I use this in my advanced academic writing class, and this is the feedback that I usually get. Like people have these reservations, like, but you really want me, once the timer hits 25 minutes or 20 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever my Pomodoro time is, to just like drop my pencil and go or go away from my laptop mid-sentence? Yes, exactly. That's what I want. because it's much easier to, after 5 minutes, to start writing again when you're in the middle of something than having to start afresh from scratch. It makes absolute sense now that I know that you used that in your seminar. I understand why the feeling of accomplishment was so great amongst your students, because what Pomodoro does is shifting the focus. Although, okay, so your seminar, you said, was very output-oriented or product-oriented, because at the end there was this blog. But the process, actually, to get to this output is very process-oriented. The Pomodoro technique doesn't focus on how much I managed to produce in 25 minutes, but it focuses on time spent working on something. And for us, as coming from the humanities, that oftentimes means not producing anything palpable at all. It sometimes simply means sitting down and thinking for 25 minutes. And that can feel terribly unproductive. However, the moment I time this and I can actually say how many units of Pomodoro I spent sitting down and thinking, I see how much time I actually spent productively sort of pushing my project forward. And that feels much, much better than looking like ending a workday and then looking at an empty Word document and thinking, I haven't written anything. What a terrible day. No, I spent so and so many Pomodoro units thinking about this project that I'm writing in this class. And I'm much further along in the process of conceptualizing my blog entry than I was at the beginning of this day. And now a lot of things make much more sense to me when it comes to the success of this class and this writer's room idea.
Yeah, basically almost everyone commented on how useful it was to work with the Pomodoro method. And some said, okay, it wasn't for me, but that was okay because they had the option to go to the other room. But many said, for instance, I've heard about this before, or even someone actually very highly recommended it to me as a strategy to use it as a strategy for academic writing, but I never tried it because I don't know, it doesn't really sound like it was something that would work for me. So I think there's a huge difference between just telling people, okay, this is a good strategy, you should try that when you're alone, isolated at home, and feeling like disconnected and frustrated about your writing, or whether you do it actually, whether you implement it in your classroom processes. Okay, so Tuesday and Wednesday were drafting days, where everyone worked on their draft, and Thursday was revision day. So I think on Thursday I divided the rooms and said, okay, one of the rooms is like writing room, and I keep the Pomodoro timer on there. And the other room is for getting and giving feedback. So everyone who wants to write is in this room. And at any point where you feel you would like some feedback, you come to the other room. And you will probably find someone there to give you feedback on your text. And if you don't find anyone, I'll be there and I'll give you feedback on your text. So I was in the other room the whole time on Thursday. And it was important to me to basically include all the stages of writing in the classroom. So I wanted to include also doing a revision and doing the editing of the text. And revision is more on content-oriented level, and editing is more on the language correctness level. And I think one of the misconceptions that many inexperienced writers have is you write text, you are finished, and then you maybe proofread it, and that's it. And this very important stage of revising text gets left out. And what this leads to is that you don't think in terms of draft and finished text. And this means if you don't revise text, if you don't plan for a revision of your text, that means that what you have to write from the beginning is the finished text. And that's very hard. And for many people, this leads to blank page anxiety, understandably, because to approach writing a text with the idea that every single sentence basically has to be perfect from the beginning, because the only thing that you'll ever do to this sentence afterwards is proofreading it, that's scary. And thinking in terms of draft, so rough text that still has the chance to get polished, where you can shift around whole paragraphs, delete complete sentence, restructure sentence, add stuff. Having this later stage in mind, I think, gives you much more freedom to just put something on the page. Keep in mind that you can work on it and revise it later.
I think the point that you just made about drafting is very important, because I think one of the misconceptions is that first writing very roughly a draft that is reorganized and changed heavily during the revision process before you go into proofreading, is often perceived as something that takes longer than if I immediately produce the right words, that immediately the right text. But I think that's not true. And it takes some doing it the one way and then switching to the other way to really experience it, to really see, okay, if I sit down and I try to produce immediately the right thing, I will spend a lot of time simply sitting there, staring at my document. I write a sentence, I'm not satisfied, I get frustrated, I delete the sentence, I try to rewrite the sentence, and I may be satisfied with half of it. Then I'm trying to write the second half and it doesn't work, so I delete the second half. Then I may leave it be for the afternoon because I'm tired. I come back the next day, I look at that sentence, I'm still not satisfied with it, I delete the whole thing again, and it just takes as much time, I think, overall, as if I were to simply write something first, like Pat always says, don't write well right now, and then consider this always a first draft, and then I go back through it again and reorganize and shift things around. It feels much more productive, it feels less frustrating, I think, and it doesn't take up more time. I don't think. And to make this experience in classes where you get the chance to write text and perceive it as a draft and then rework it together with others who also view their texts as first drafts. I think that's cool. And I think you're right. By allotting time to these things, to draft stages, revision processes, proofreading processes as separate things, we can make this much, much clearer than if we leave students alone with the process of writing always. Like, we don't have to, I don't think we have to do this in all classes, but doing it in the majority of classes, I think, can have a considerable impact on how students perceive their own writing processes and how much more comfortable they can become with their own writing.
Also, what I learned is, especially when it comes to revising text, most people are very, very unfamiliar with what this means. And every experienced writer, most experienced writers, know that this is important. And also as teachers of writing, we tell people this is important to do. But I think we don't usually explain what it actually means and how to do it. And we don't help them do it. And so what I did in class, I explained a bit more about what is the difference between revising and editing text. And also, what does revision even mean? What do you do there? And I came up with two different reader personas, basically, and asked them to go through when they did the peer feedback of other people's text, to go through each text having both these different reader personas in mind. And the first persona was basically like, imagine a random person who comes to the blog, is looking for, like, first maybe an interesting title that catches their interest. And then they're reading the text. And so what is this person paying attention to? Is the title catchy, for instance? Would be one of the things, right? Can I follow the argument? Does the argument interest me? Is the introduction, does the introduction lead me to believe that this is a text I would like to read? And also, what do I come to expect from the introduction? And does the text fulfill this, these expectations? And so on. And the other reader persona was more like an editor, so someone who's responsible for the quality of a text. And I asked them to, as this reader persona, read the text slowly, sentence by sentence, and check for every single sentence. Does the sentence make sense? Is it logical? Is it grammatically sound? Okay, that's not really the most important thing here, because that's what you check for in editing. But does the sentence have a place in the argument and in the paragraph? Is it connected? Do I understand what it's doing there? Is it like if you have longer sentences, does a sentence have logical coherence and all that stuff? And I think that they already helped them a lot, although I also noticed that most people were done with their first, with peer reviewing, feedbacking, their first text much faster than I expected them to be, because it would have taken me much longer. This is because I have a lot of experience doing this stuff, and they don't. So they are not used to reading text as thoroughly as I would have. But this also goes to show that this is something that needs a lot of practice. And a lot of the feedback that I got for the class was actually about revision and how many said, for instance, they had never revised a text before like that because they never knew how and what to do. No one ever explained to them how to do it properly. And no one gave them the techniques to do it and so on. And many said, I never in my life have revised the text as much as I did this one, even though we only had one day for that. And for me, this isn't much time for thoroughly revising text, but still for them, that felt like they did that really thoroughly and much more thoroughly than they ever had before.
That makes so much sense to me. I have like a mind-blown moment. Like when I think back to my own school experience, for instance, I still think I wrote much, much more text, like quantitatively in school, than I did in the 10 years that I've been at university. And all the writing that I did in school, like for instance in exams, this is not meant for revision. It's meant for correction. So the feedback that I get is grammatical in nature. It has something to do with syntax or with word choice or with spelling. And the only correction that I will ever do is write down the correct sentences in my correction. So that is what I will naturally associate with revision, with correction, when I go to university. And if nobody ever tells me, and so surely nobody ever told me that when I was... that's not true. We had revisions in, I have to give credit where credit's due. There were writing classes, but they were only ever in English, which I think is telling, where revision was something more than correcting spelling errors and grammatical mistakes, where it was about like genre and where about logic and like paragraph structure and positions of paragraphs, like actually like even working on the content of the thing. But I don't remember this from German studies, for instance, which was my second subject. That also never happened in biology back when I was studying biology, because it wasn't perceived to be, it was either not perceived to be essential or, which I think is worse, it's perceived as something that students naturally know. Something that they or that they suck up like sort of like a sponge when they're just exposed to proper academic writing. But that this is not how writing works or learning how to write works. And it makes it clicked for me right now why I was struggling myself with revision processes so often, because the only thing I ever knew about revision before I came to university and before I had like lectures in the British and American Studies department. Why I couldn't deal with anything but spelling errors in correction phases. It makes absolute sense that your students sort of gave this type of feedback to you. Look, I've never worked like this on a text.
Yeah, I think this is exactly one of the most bizarre contradictions between schooling and higher education, that in schooling, all you ever write are one-shots.
Yeah.
every new text is a one-shot. And then you go to university and people somehow expect you to write very complex texts, which can only be produced in a drafting revision process, basically because of their complexity, because of the many formal rules that they entail. And they just expect you to know how to do that, how to go and about this. All the texts you get to read final versions, but the process how they were arrived at is not open for you to see. We as teachers don't let students take part in the writing, in our own writing processes usually, which would be very instructive, I think, to show students how we develop draft text into final text. To see this live would be one of the exercises that I would like to have in one of my classes. It's very difficult to conceive of, actually, because this process for me is something I do in my study, and it has yet to be tried out, like the writer's room had to be tried out.
Yeah, so I think it's really important if we want students to appreciate that revision is a good thing to do, that it makes text better. If we expect them to learn this as a very crucial skill that every writer should have, I think we need to integrate revision processes into the teaching, and ideally in the time, in the precious classroom time that we have. But also I think we need to give revision meaning, because doing revision after the fact, so if students have handed in papers and got them graded and then we ask them to revise it, it's completely meaningless. Why would you do that? The text is done and dusted. It's, as Keith Yorzo, for instance, would say, it's basically dead, because there's nothing alive in this text anymore. No one will ever get to see it. Why would you still work on it? So revision also needs to have a place in a meaningful writing process. And also, I think this is why it worked so well in our class. Because I think that when we came to the end of Wednesday and most of the people had finished their, or many had finished their draft, so the writing was basically done and we still had two days to go. And when I then introduced that we first would do peer feedback, then revising the texts, then have each other's text proofread, and then integrating proofreading and finishing, finalizing the text within 2 days. I'm not really sure whether people actually thought that, but the impression I got was a bit like, isn't this a bit overblown? Isn't this a bit much? Can't we just do this faster? Can't we just leave out some of those steps? Are they really necessary? But I think that everyone in the end went with it. And did it was because the goal was to have a published text, to have a finalized text on Friday that was getting published in a public space where everyone could see it. So all these processes of making the text better had meaning. Yeah, and so this is basically to come to the end of how this worked and how we actually did it. So Friday was mostly proofreading the texts. Some people finished their drafts on Friday and found someone to do a quick peer review with them and did a quick revision of their text. And I think except for one or two people who had emergency obligations coming up during the week and they handed in their text then over the weekend or at the beginning of the next week, everyone finished on Friday. And also we did this really cool thing because I uploaded the blog on the university website, and me and a student in the class who incidentally works for the IT department basically spent a lot of time on Friday just uploading those texts live. And I had the blog website on a projector on the wall, so everyone constantly during the whole last day could see how the list of the entries grew. Wow. That was really cool to see.
That's,
I think,
so cool. That
awesome. Because I wanted to give them this sense of accomplishment, the sense of, okay, you've done this, you have produced these texts, and they are there now, they are published now, right? Yeah, so I think this was an important thing actually to do this, because usually students write texts, one person gets to read them, and that's it. And this is also one of the things that came up in the feedbacks again and again, that people said for some it was really scary to know that other people, random people, will read their text. But everyone said, in the end, I was proud of my text, and it feels so good that it is published, that it's up there. It also tells you something about this need that not only students, but people in general have, that if they work on something, if they invest in something, it must have a meaning that is social and that is communal. And just to read from one of the things people wrote about this, I felt that I have actually produced something of value, a feeling that I sometimes miss as a student at university.
Yeah.
And that was the general thing about having those texts published and seeing them in this way. Yeah. And so while this was going on, we also had a little like celebration round where some people brought snacks, and we just basically reflected on the seminar and watched the list of entries grow and so on. Some people still were in the finishing phases of their text. Some were finished basically by Friday morning. But what they did, they still came to class and they said, well, guys, I'm basically done, but I'm here to help you out. If you want someone for feedback or proofreading, I'm here to help you out with this. And this is also, I think, that we had this huge productive and also very supportive atmosphere was important for everyone.
Should any of the students who were part of that seminar listen right now, you are awesome and you rock.
Yeah, I'm retrospectively envious of this seminar experience. I would have liked to have taken part, actually, and been part of the writers' room. And now I'm kind of sad that I already logged in my seminar for next semester, but maybe in summer I would love to offer something like that. Maybe you want to repeat it too.
A lot of people said in their feedback sheets, I wish more people would do formats like that. Yeah. So, yeah, that goes to all of us. Go forth and do more stuff like this.
I feel like I really want to try something like this, but I also feel that the pressure is on. Like, shit. We have a good example of that already. People know what this feels like. And now, can I reproduce something like this?
Yeah, I did it without any experience of the sort. And it worked out, worked much better than I anticipated, because I was anxious all the time that this is not going to work.
That's super interesting. It simply means your students immediately had sort of a sense of faith that this would work out, and like the teachers stressing out it. Just do people actually take something away from this? And I think if we do our best to sort of make these formats work and we just give it a try, then students will always be able to take something away from this class. The fact that it was apparently an incredible success has to do with the care that you took in planning this, and has something to do with the dedication of the students and the willingness to react to the way in which you put forward a new type of didactic structure, and their willingness to use that structure to simply see what happens. Everybody involved was willing to simply try and do their best and build this relationship that made the class work.
Thanks for listening. Unconditional Teaching is a project by Jessica Koch, Katharina Peach, and myself, Till Zibura. Music by Lily Olason. If you want to know more about our project and our partners, check out unconditional-teaching.com. If you like our content or would like to engage with us, head over to our comment sections or contact us via email, team@unconditional-teaching.com.